Sutong Pa, a Sung dynasty poet. He lived from 1036 to 1101, Common Era. Was awakened, enlightened, walking in the mountains, and he wrote the following to express his awakening. The sounds of the valley stream are his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountain are his pure body. In the night I heard the myriad sutras uttered. How can I relate to others what they mean? In talking about this, Dogen in a chapter says, this insight enabled him to be enlightened when he heard the valley stream. And his example is edifying. It is a pity that from ancient times up to the present, people do not realize that the universe is proclaiming the actual body of Buddha. One reason we have difficulties with this is all sorts of narrowness in our vision and comprehension, in our sense of life. Of course, we start the four practice principles with caught in self-centered dream. But many of us take that phrase, self-centered dream, in a very narrow sense. Oh, that's self, me in this body versus other people. We're human-centric in our perspective and we don't realize it. Not only are we human-centric, we're animate-centric. When Wang Po says, there are no other dharmas besides this one mind. Says it and starts saying, Buddhas and sentient beings are one mind. No other dharmas besides this. We take it in terms of animate beings. Our view is of animate and inanimate, blinds us to the life that we are. The poet's awakening occurred when he asked his teacher about the phrase, inanimate objects proclaim the Dharma. It's only struggling with this phrase, with this koan, walking in the mountains and hearing the sound of the valley stream in the mountains, that he realized this. We are so self-absorbed that we think we walk through a universe and it's about us walking through these other things that are there all about us. So, on one level, it's good to start with seeing other people. Next, good to see other beings, animate. Then, beyond that, seeing so-called inanimate. Of course, these are just categories that we humans create and then privilege some versus others. Privilege some versus others. If we only see our practice in terms of one body, three treasures, as we spoke of the first day, then Yasutani Roshi says our practice descends to the level of mere philosophy and the study of mental delusion. Practice, our life, the, if I use the word the Buddha way, the awakened life, is much, much more than that. Is not limited by such things. So this is very difficult to talk about. In fact, it goes against so many of the ordinary assumptions and presumptions of speech and human life, that we hear a poem like that and take it, oh, that's metaphorical. Metaphorical. We hear a koan like Joshu's asked, what is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? And his response, oak tree in the garden. And we take it as a metaphor of something, as a symbol of something. Oak tree in the garden. Yunmen is asked, what is the pure body of the Buddha? Very straightforward question. The flowering garden hedge. Someone else is awakened on seeing flowering peach blossoms. We think, oh, it's those peach blossoms out there did something to him inside. That's human-centric. That's self-centered. That's mental delusions where we limit ourself. We limit ourself in our functioning from morning to night in the midst of this body. That is our life. When we describe Buddha's awakening and we say Buddha was awakened on seeing the morning star, is the morning star separate from Buddha? If you think he saw the morning star and something happened inside his quote head, inside his body, inside his mind, then that much you don't see. That much your whole practice becomes a mental delusions and philosophy. Our practice is whole body, mind, world, which is why, in one sense, talking about it becomes distraction sometimes and impossible to really touch anything more than concepts and other matters that are only pointers and encouragement but are not this fundamental point. Though it's not easy to get for us, especially us modern humans, when we talk about the Buddha of maintaining three treasures. Dogen says, converting devas and liberating humans, appearing in vast space or in a speck of dust. This is the Buddha treasure. We hear that and we go, well, yeah, it's something, who knows what. What does it mean that myriad worlds are in a speck of dust? What does that mean? We take it in a theoretical, conceptual way. And then we take all the specks of dust that we encounter from morning to night in that way. That way, we disregard our life. All those aspects of our life. See? When he says myriad verses are heard throughout the night. What is that he's talking about? We're talking about sutras and scriptures and other. How are these heard? He doesn't mean it just metaphorically. What are sutras? They're expressions of this true nature that we are. What is Buddhas in various forms? We have Buddhas here, Buddhas there. You have rocks. There's Buddhas all over the world. If they were all just metaphors, then maybe they're useful. But then we've reduced much of life to symbols, and we've missed the strength and essence of it. Dogen especially has a number of chapters where he uses mountains and rivers, but it's not only Dogen, others as well. Yunmen again, and in another case, talks about, he says, the East Mountain walks across the water. Dogen's comment on it is that this essence of realization and actualization of the way is that all mountains are East Mountain, and all those East Mountains walk across the water. Therefore, nine great mountains and the mountains of India actualize themselves and attain practice and enlightenment. This is East Mountain. That's why we can talk about the practice of the preaching of insentient beings, inanimate beings. What is that? Do we live in a world where there's us and all these inanimate things all around us, and do we believe that privileging? It's fine to talk about it as a one of many ways to talk about things. There's humans and non-humans. There's myself and someone else here. That's fine. But if we get caught in that, there's a human and a wood floor. But if we get caught in that, then our life is that much limited by our preconceptions and conceptions that close us off Dogen continues in that chapter, we should know that the East Mountain walking across the water is the bones and marrow of the Buddhas and ancestors. All types of water are actualized at the foot of the East Mountain. Water is not comprised of earth, water, fire, wind, space, consciousness, and so forth. It is not blue, yellow, red, white, black, and so forth. It has no form, sound, smell, taste, sensation, perception. Nevertheless, it is actualized in all these things. Consequently, it is very difficult to be able to clarify the nature of this world. Correct interpretation depends on the meaning of wind and emptiness. It doesn't depend on ideas of oneself and others and beyond superficial understanding. Do not limit your vision to some narrow range. And yet we limit our vision. So there's all sorts of ways that we are encouraged and supported if we are open. There are all sorts of koans that attempt to enable us to be beyond our self-centric, human-centric, animate-centric vision. See, that's what our practice is all the time. That's why we say practice is being this moment. Being this moment isn't just inside some bag of skins. It's being this moment the whole universe. Time, space are all together just this moment. That means everything in front of you is just this moment. That's why it's hard for us to understand Buddhas and ourself being just this one mind. Nothing besides that. And if there's nothing besides that, then it's only yourself taking care of yourself. But if you don't see it, then you perpetuate self-centered dream. We perpetuate self-centered dream. And our tendency, our habits are to do that because we are, if I use the word, addicted to all sorts of self-centered privileging, and it just seems natural. So I won't say too much more, because in a way this Buddhas of the maintained three treasure Buddha of maintained three treasure is not something that we can easily conceptually grasp, and yet we can chew it and see for ourselves when we encounter the morning star, when we appear in vast space. In the actual working of this as a koan, there are two testing questions that I'll share. One is, what kind of Buddhas appear in vast space? What kind of Buddhas appear in dust? And this whole matter is, again, an opportunity for us from when we're washing dishes, chopping vegetables, digging in the garden, driving down the road, just as well as walking in the mountains at night and listening to the sutras that the streams chant. It's our body. The sounds of the valley streams are his long broad tongue, his, referring to Buddha's long broad tongue. The forms of the mountain are his pure body. See? Or is the night star sky your pure body? If not, how not? If so, how so? The Dharma of the maintained three treasures, Dogen uses the phrase, transformed into sutras and converted into oceanic storehouse, it delivers the animate and inanimate. This is the Dharma treasure. How do we deliver inanimate? See, that's practice. There's koan after koan dealing with this. Because that's how we have to, if I say it in such a way, broaden and expand our vision and capacity and our practice and our life. Because our life is broad, expanded. It's boundless. We use words like boundless for a reason. Not just because they sound good. Not because there's some metaphor for something else. That's why Wangpo says all dharmas are nothing but this. How do we save all beings? So, in a way, this is very hard. It's hard for us because us meaning us humans, especially us modern humans, because our whole culture is a culture of human-centric. It is. Not only is it self-centric, but it's human-centric in all sorts of ways, which is fine. It's what we got born into, and it's our opportunity to see when we are caught in self-centered dream. But I want us to have a little sense of how the word self-centered is not just about this little name that we give ourselves and this person that we imagine ourselves inside a bag of skin. Therefore, we can say in the Heart Sutra, not born, not destroyed. No end, no old age and death, and no end to old age and death. It's very way we could say our practice is always this moment, nothing left over and nothing left out, both equality and differentiation, not one covering over the other. And yet when it's equality, it's just this one mind. When it's differentiation, its emptiness is form. This form is the swallows up the whole universe. So the peach blossoms are the body of the Buddha. Or the dish your washing is the body of the Buddha, is your body. So take good care of it. Okay, I'll stop here. Yeah, enough of my jabbering. Maybe we can clarify this a little bit as an assist to your practice. Not because we need to remember any of these words, but in a sense we're saying it all the time. When you breathe, it's not you breathing, it's the universe breathing you. Then breathing is the awareness of breathing that reaches across space and time in a very immediate sense. Just this moment. Okay. So how do we practice with this? That's the question.
Well, you were talking about these experiences of these other Zen people, and they seem to be looking at the limitlessness of everything, and I find that trying to grab at limitlessness it's impossible for me to. So I'm always trying to limit something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always trying to grab onto something, and there's nothing to grab onto. So how do you just? I just can't.
It's not to grab on to limitlessness, but be the limitlessness that you are. See? When we believe limits, even limits of so-called past, present, future, self and other, then that much we are limited. Not in some grand philosophical, metaphorical sense, but in very immediate senses of our functioning. So it's always our functioning and seeing where you put the limits of your functioning in ordinary, everyday activity. I don't mean you have to do something special and go wander in the mountains or anything like that. I'm talking about the everyday activities of eating and sleeping, shitting and gardening and anything else that you do. Those are boundless functionings of the Buddha body. That's the functioning of this one mind, if I use that expression, or this awakened life, unless we limit it. And that's what we do with self-centered thinking, reactive habits, addictive behavior, and all the other ways we can describe that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, I mean, just the words, and then I have these thoughts that come up about trying to narrow it and limit it. And that I know that doesn't work, but I don't feel I can do anything else.
Good. Let the thoughts come and go, but no need to limit yourself to those thoughts and feelings. You are beyond that. Not because you have to do something extra, but because right now you are beyond that. So your very functioning is the functioning of the Buddha. Not because you do something special to do that. It's only when we are sure and believe otherwise, or when we cling to what's traditionally called greed, anger, and ignorance, that we miss it. We miss who we are. It's not that we need to get something more. It's to cease holding on to the things that keep us from being who we are. Not knowing is okay. Not knowing is most intimate, said one ancestor. So be the intimacy of not knowing.
So if I notice that there's all this stuff trying to come up, do I just sort of like go, just put like little red lights there? Oh, that's not
good. Let it,
what you think.
Let it come and go.
Okay.
Let it come. And see, and that's what one of the things that we, the capacity of sitting is that you know that that can come and go. Just like the sound of the street right here comes and goes. It comes and goes. You don't have to limit yourself to the sound of the street. And you don't have to limit yourself to the sound of your mind chatter. Except that we tend, out of habits, to do that, to be mind chatter centric, if I say it that way. Yeah. Well, that's one habit some of us have, some of the time. We all have different forms of this. I shouldn't say have, we act out on different forms of this. That's why they're such strong habits. That's just cause and effect, the habits, and yet because we are more than this, we have the capacity to go beyond it. That's the practice in an awakening, or that's the intention that we have the opportunity each moment, if I say it that way. And the forms and the structures of practice in various ways, whether in the Zendo or in Sesshin or at other times, are designed to enable us to do that. And it's up to us to enlist and be supported by them when it's necessary. And you're right. It's not, quote, easy. Only not easy for us when we hold on to habits of attachment. Then it's not easy. And we hold on to it, I don't mean just mentally, but physically, emotionally, in all the other ways that we limit ourselves, limit our self-functioning. And we justify it by saying it's natural, it's everyone else does it, it's what, you know, etc., etc. As if that makes the stress and dissatisfaction and suffering that results from it better because everyone else does it. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah.
I don't think that Buddha is supposed to be a god, but I find that it's easier for me to understand that, coming from my tradition, thinking about what you're talking about as God being in everything and nothing.
Well, if you'd want to say that, then take the next step and say God is exactly you.
Right.
You know, it's, if you want to, if, since you are coming from the Jewish tradition, I'll say there's a phrase that says Ki korav alecha hadova ma'ay b'ficha levavcha la'asaisai, which means it's very intimate, very intimate. It's in your mouth and heart to function as. So if you want to use that word, fine, use the word God. The problem with the word God for humans is we tend to abstract it, add on all sorts of conditions and circumstances to it and externalize it great distance. So what is there to since someone asked about Christian, there's a Christian expression, Meister Eckhart says, the God that the eye with which God sees you is the eye with which you see God. Okay? But we again have difficulties. Instead we talk about God in, you know, all sorts of terms of externalizing and privileging. So as long as we don't do that, then fine. Use that word if you want to. I don't care. I don't use it. But
no, I'm just saying, I mean, and I don't know if this is helpful to others too or not, but I mean, I when you talk about the mountains and the stream, I mean, that's the way I understand that. That
good.
That's all God.
Good.
I am God. You are where everything.
Good.
You know,
it's good.
That's how I understand it.
Then function that way, which means the trash, the used piece of toilet paper is God, and the trash outside is God, and the loud person who's you say is annoying you is God. See, and then how do we function?
Well,
that
I get intellectually. I still do get that, but you know, I don't
yeah.
get that. That's true.
Right. So. I don't care what words we use. But traditionally, if you use the word Buddha, you should wash your mouth out and wash your ears out. In fact. Okay.
See, it seems like a... Well, what I heard as you were speaking was a kind of gratitude practice. And responsiveness, you know, to wake up to the fact that there even is a floor underneath me, let alone such a gorgeous floor. And, you know, well, somebody brought us a six-sided leafed plant yesterday. It's just this tiny little plant. And he was so excited. I have this for you. He said, I have this. Look at this wonderful six-sided leaf. What is six?
Hexagon?
Thank you.
I think. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This hexagonal leaf. And he also is somebody who says, look. And he'll point to the tiniest little, you know, sprout of something coming. And so being around him is you know, a pleasure in terms of waking up to certain things that I wouldn't otherwise be awake to. And what I hear is, you know, wake up, be grateful.
Okay.
When I listen, I want to apply what I hear.
Yes.
So immediately I started to think of how what you explained applied to my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm extremely attached to the idea of not cleaning up after my 23-year-old. And I've decided that he has to move. I refuse to clean. I've asked for weeks, 6 weeks, and now there's a hoarding situation developing, so there's mm-hmm. no other way to deal with it. So, as I listen to you, I'll find another way. Thank you.
You're welcome. I often say, you don't have to remember anything I say. If something resonates, fine, but it's the only reason I speak is with the intention that this be something in here support your practice. Otherwise, it's a waste of your time to listen to what I say, and for me to speak is just pouring dirt on your head. So, no need to hold on to anything or any of it. And if it doesn't I'll use the word compute, connect, resonate. Fine, let it go. You don't have to approve it or agree with it or make sense of it. Let it just be there, and if something touches, good. Words are supports for practice. They're not a substitute. And remembering them and figuring them out are not necessary, though that's just another function of being human, and it's a fine function, except that we tend to privilege it and sometimes limit ourselves by that privileging.
And listening to the poem that you talked about at the beginning, it seems that a lot of these guys back then got enlightened in the mountains and by the streams, by the peach blossoms or whatever. And I was thinking, well, there's the street and these cars, and that doesn't feel very enlightening to me. I'm sorry, it doesn't. But walking in the mountains often, if I have that privilege to do, does feel expanding.
Uh-huh.
I feel expanded. So.
Good. So your practice is to expand yourself to the traffic on the street. No, I mean it.
No, I know you do.
One of my teachers talked about the practice when you're driving to be listening to the symphony of the highway.
Yeah.
That's the chanting of the dharmas. Just like the mountain streams. See, we tend to say, well, one of them is human created and unnatural or artificial, and the other one is, quote, natural. No other dharmas but this one mind. That's what Wang Po said, long before there were any highways.
But I think the fact is that we are uplifted by natural places people go, all kinds of places.
We allow ourselves, some of us, to be uplifted by those places, be filled with awe by those places. It's easier there. Just like it's easier to be present and sit in a zendo than it is on the public transportation in Chicago. And yet, I don't go on the public transportation in Chicago much because I'm not in Chicago much. But that's another place we can do zazen. There are different supports, and it depends on our capacity and our abilities to make use of those supports. And we always have to practice where we are, not in some idealized place. So you can go to a cave in the mountain and walk in the mountains, but your mind chatter can keep you going right along there because you bring it along. And of course, at first it's different and wow. And then after a few weeks of sitting by yourself in the mountains, who knows what? Different. So it takes a certain practice capacity to enlist and be supported and nurtured by the mountains. And of course, there are some people who would never want to let a moment of silence occur in the mountains. So they bring along their machines and, you know, gadgets and their texting and all the rest because. Or they're chattering, or whatever. But that's what we humans do. I'm not being critical of them. That's what we humans do. That's called caught in self-centered dream, holding to self-centered thoughts. That's in broad generalities. I could point to other ways of saying it, but it doesn't make a difference. What's valuable for us is to see how we are doing it. How we are doing it so that we miss the sutras that the street traffic are reciting. We miss the voice of God, if I use that expression, in the crowded shopping mall. If you say the voice of God is everywhere, isn't it there? Or maybe they have a sign at the gate, God not allowed in.
Your Dharma talk reminds me of a photograph by a famous contemporary Chinese artist, Wei Wei.
Uh-huh. Ai Weiwei?
Yes, well, you know, if you know the photograph then. There's a lot of different things it's dealing with, but certainly one of them is the privileging of objects, inanimate objects, and the almost fetishizing. And it's an image of him, his hands are open, and you see a Ming dynasty vase right around where his knees are, has yet to hit the pavement, and that's the image. Mm-hmm. And you see it, and your first reaction is, ah! You know, but it's so well done because it touches exactly on that, I don't know how to say it, that sort of how dare you, or how destructive, or you know, all the thoughts that come up when we believe something is being destroyed that shouldn't be destroyed, I suppose. Okay. That's all. I recommend Googling it for those of you who haven't seen it.
Now, I want to add something to what I said a moment ago about, yes, there's a symphony of the highway, and that doesn't take away from going to the concert hall and listening to this, you know, this Ninth Symphony of Beethoven, or his Moonlight Sonata. In fact, the teacher who mentioned the Symphony of the Highway used to love listening to Beethoven's late string quartets. One doesn't negate differences. Differences are to be appreciated each as they are. And yet, if we hold on to differences, then we miss something else. Especially when we privilege differences. See, then we get into likes and dislikes in the midst of the universe that is opening its hand to us all the time and allows and encourages us to open our hand, mind, body of thought, feeling, and so forth.
What do you, the privileging thing, I don't quite understand.
Privileging is when you say, this is important, but this is not so important. That's what I, that's how I'm using that word.
And most people think of Ming Vaz. Ming Dynasty Vaz is pretty important compared to other Vaz.
Nature?
What you said about words, if they're support for practice but not a substitute, then I guess you wouldn't, koans wouldn't be useful if they just remained as words then.
They'd be wonderful words, but you have to not be trapped by the words of words. Then words are the whole universe. If you remember, a number of times, well, I won't say anything, enough. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, LAU Genmyo Smith.